Hey there, here's another CaperCast from Jim Brown. It's part two of our telephone conversation with Roger Hatfield, whose achievement at Gold Coast Yachts, St. Croix, Virgin Islands, is at least partly explained by the fact that he's perhaps the only designer since Nathaniel Herreshoff to be available for work on the shop floor every day. But we're going to pick up the conversation when Roger begins speaking of building a boat at Gold Coast for another designer, the renowned Paul Beaker, and this boat is to be infusion molded. Now again, the audio is pretty sketchy here, and the talk is rather techie. But if you'll hang in with Roger here, you'll see that the story is 100 feet long.
This fellow, Paul Beaker, who got introduced to us by your son, Russ Brown, had been doing all the foils for the America's Cup Series for Mr. Oracle himself. And he had a client for a 52 racing cruising catamaran he had drawn. And he and the owner, the client, traveled around and looked at a bunch of different yards, and they settled on us, and we were very happy about it. It was a very complicated and sophisticated build. And our suggestion was we were professionals at infusion. By this time, we had done 60, 70 infused hulls, probably more than, you know, I mean, a huge amount of stuff, not just hulls. But Phil Sagel came along. We knew that he was selling specialty carbon fiber fabrics, and we hired him to come on down. And he got us right up to speed with the processes for doing the infusion. We proved to Paul Beaker, who had only seen disasters with infusion of carbon fiber, we proved to him we could do it consistently and get exactly what he had requested, perhaps more, at least as uniformly as a pre-preg. He was totally happy with this. And Relative to pre-preg. In a lot of ways, it's easier. What you have to have for infusion is incredibly good vacuum pressure, and you can lose it at your pump, you can lose it in your pipelines, you can lose it in your mold, and you can lose it in the bag. So once the guys get really good at testing each component and making sure they're not losing vacuum, you can infuse through, you know, you can infuse anything. It's incredible. You just have to suck it down and let it sit overnight and make sure she doesn't lose pressure and then go for it. And it's an incredible process. And, you know, we just had to clean up our shop to the next level of cleanliness. The cloth had to be, like, covered all the time, and the tables had to be clean, and the shop had to be dust-free because – you know, you infuse what you've got. If it's got oily fingerprints, you infuse it. If it's got dust, you infuse it, right? But if you have moisture, it's gone. There is no moisture in an infused product. It's fucked out. It's cool. So after we had built this catamaran Fuji, or while we were building it, Warren is coming around again.
Roger is speaking here of Warren Mosler, his client for the wave-piercing catamaran Not My Problem from our previous podcast.
He loves this high-tech carbon fiber stuff, and he's coming around, and good tennis player, you know, carbon fiber rack and all this. Well, he had this idea, and he'd had somebody take 2 9-foot dinghies and stick them together, one in front of the other. And, you know, he was out riding it. He was just jumping up and down about this. And I went out and rode it. Well, the thing was a little bit unstable, but, I mean, it would go fast. It was crazy. But, you know, what Warren forgot was he was living under the legacy of Dick Newick and now under the heavy influence of Gold Coast Yachts. And it became obvious to everybody who saw this little tandem monohull that he built, and one in front of the other, right? Identical or similar. It became obvious the thing needed to be cut in half and spread apart a little bit.
Cut in half down the middle lengthwise.
There's a half down the middle lengthwise, exactly, yeah. And put inboard topsides on the thing. And so, never in my wildest dreams did I appreciate where this is going to lead. And, you know, he insisted I come out and drive. I rode this thing all over. I drove this thing. He was driving it all over the place. And I couldn't see anything inherently wrong with it. And it was hard to compare it to anything else. There wasn't any boat its size that would play length, you know, displacement to length ratio. No, there was no way to compare it. But Warren was sure this is the best thing since sliced bread. And you know what? The big problem for me was that he wanted Gold Coast to build a 100-foot version. And even worse, 2 9-foot dinghies. The thing is 23 feet long. And even worse, he wants it to be the inter-island ferry. And any boat that's ever tried to be the inter-island ferry between St. Thomas and St. Croix has met its Waterloo.
Yeah.
You know, Gold Coast has had his own experience, but every aluminum welded together catamaran in Australia or any place Incat ever built, every boat, every foil, Russian foil boat, they've all been out of service for weeks at a time from getting smashed apart on this route, right? Warren wants this thing at 100 feet. And I was like, no way. So, you know, I'm going to be the practical guy. We need to build a larger scale model. I'm thinking maybe we need to build a 50-footer. Warren refused, you know. So, but Warren's got plenty of money. And so I go, okay, Warren, I mean, we thought about it for a long time. I really thought about this for a lot because – And it's another project for Gold Coast. I mean, you know, another all-out carbon fiber project. So, you know, okay, I'll put time into this. You know, I could just bill them. We were on a point where we were billing them to take care of stuff for them. And I figured out what I wanted the structure to be. I got four hulls, and I want to join them with a big box. The forward hulls are 32 feet, I think, and there's, what, 20 feet of space maybe between them? And then the after hulls are 42 feet instead of 32. They got to carry the engines and stuff. And they have two cross beams holding them together, full height bulkheads that go down into the hulls fully. And, you know, and I guessed at all this stuff. You know, I've done some of the carbon fiber analysis. And so I come up with what I think this thing might really weigh and so forth. And then I have some different drawings of different boats, and I piece them together and stick them in. And I look at this thing on the computer, and then the wonderful thing about 3D, drawing a hull in 3D, is you could spin it all around and look at it. Well, I rotated it upside down, and now I'm looking at the four hulls from the fish eyes view. And you know what? All of a sudden, I go, okay, I'm on. I'm in for this. I'm doing this. This is going to be okay. You know, I'm a swimmer. I'm a biker. And drafting really, really works. Man, you draft when you bike and you draft when you swim as much as you can. And here's one hull in front of the other. And I'm going, really, what could be wrong here? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know,
when you say draft, you mean get behind a competitor.
You get sucked by them, yes. They
yeah.
created, I don't know, I mean, I went across the country as a young man in my Volkswagen bus getting pulled by tractor trailers, right? They don't like that, but you don't have, you put your foot on the brake, not on the gas, right? You can stop faster than the tractor trailer. That's all you got to do. So, anyway, I said yes. The problem with multi-hulls is they're like the reverse of an iceberg. In an iceberg, you see 10% of the iceberg, 90% underwater. In a multi-hull, usually you see like 90% above the water, especially in this really lightweight carbon fiber box, I mean, with four hulls. So the box didn't look pretty any way that I drew it. It didn't matter. It was going to work. And underwater, it looked fine, right? And so I said, Warren, here's the deal. There's no way. I said, I'm doing what they call first principles on this thing. But I said, there's no way I'm taking responsibility for the design of this. We're going to see out full computer fluid dynamic design, computational fluid dynamics, and we're going to go to full finite element analysis on the structure. And I said, it's going to cost a bunch of money, $100,000 to $200,000. And I said, I'm not doing it unless we do that. I said, your boat's going to cost, you know, over $1 million. It's going to be $1.5 million or whatever. I said, this is what we need to do. And he said, okay. I'm the material. Okay. So we proceeded to do this. And the main frame for this, if any of the viewers want to see what this boat looks like, I suggest they go to the Gold Coast Yachts website. And the first thing they'll look for on the home page is the commercial power button. They'll click on that. There's commercial motor sailing cats and commercial power boats. Our main bread and butter was commercial work and the motor sailing boat, which is a really cool thing. And then the next page you come up to is the commercial power boats, and you click on the ferry boat. There's some of the other ones, but anyway, you click on ferry, and then you come up to see his boat, and you'll see four images. And on the far right, and they look like what you'd expect. I mean, they're, you know, you might want to have a barf bag with you. You might not. I don't know. But you click on the last image, and you see the thing from underwater. And you have to say to yourself, pretty cool looking. I mean, really unusual. So we submitted this stuff the best that we could. And one of the goals, of course, with any ferry is to be fuel efficient and lightweight and so forth. So this went into a mainframe computer and spent 24/7, a couple, 3 weeks or so to analyze. And they took the buoy off of St. Lucia because the one was gone between St. Thomas and St. Croix. They took the buoy off of St. Lucia, and it shoots to a satellite how fast it's going up and down and how frequently. So you know exactly what the wave profiles are. And they imported that wave profile into the computational fluid dynamics. They took the hull. They wanted more than where the center of gravity was. They wanted to know the weight of all the parts because, you know, when you're racing, you move your anchors into the middle of the boat, and when you're cruising, they're out on the ends where it's safe. But the motion is different, and the pressures are different. So it had to be the way the pressures were going to be. And so we had to be somewhat close. And so they came back, and they developed what the pressures were on those, which were nothing exceptional at all. And they also they determined the boat was going to be very fuel efficient, and it absolutely has proven to be the case. So then we went to the finite element analysis, and the finite element analysis is cool. So we studied we didn't do the hulls because we weren't as concerned about them, but we did the wet deck forged foam, and we did the two cabin side panels and the roof. The cabin side panels are shear webs. So there's all round windows. There was no risk here having a square window. And, boy, that was done really carefully. And then there's the four cross beams. And then there's up forward where the box terminates. It goes into the three windshield components for the captain station. So there were 15 components. And each component was analyzed for the outer skin, the inner skin, and the core.
Wow.
Core shear stress and the outer skin tension, compression, and shear. So And now it was analyzed for its operating speed in those waves for going cross waves, going diagonally up into them, and going head seas, right? And it was analyzed for every square inch of surface. It was in centimeters. It was like every 2 centimeters. So do the math on that really quickly. We're looking at 15 components, 3 sides, two parts to the top and bottom skin, 3 wave conditions, every square inch. We're looking at over a million bits of information, and it was okay. It got a little bit conservative. I can tell you one thing that we know from the finite element analysis is that we know where it's going to crack first, and they're all up in the forward cabin where the big windows are and the big triangles and stuff. But it was phenomenal. So now we had this stuff, and I'm going, we got to convince the Coast Guard. And Eric Sponberg, I sent him a letter going, what do you think of this thing? And he wrote back a wonderful, thoughtful letter. He'd done some different work for me. And he goes, good luck with the Coast Guard.
Yeah.
and I'm figuring, okay, well, I got the CFE and the FEA and HEAM. This should be a breeze, you know. And also said the boat's got 4 hulls. So that makes it pretty safe for sinking and flooding. And each hull has 4 watertight compartment spaces. That's like you driving around in your car with 4 tires on the front left, 4 tires in the front right, 4 tires on the side. You got 16 tires, and you're not going to be worried about, you know, having a flat tire. Driving around for a while, right? And so, no way, man. And they even had issues with pumps. They did not like the pumping system we were going to employ, which can be used on smaller craft with provisos. Oh, the whole thing was crazy. And It just was so frustrating. And there was one fellow who'd been a commander who I had used as a friend for years, and he goes, I came back as a civilian just to work for them because I couldn't stand how stupidly conservative they were. Uh-huh. And, you know, it was just really difficult for me. One of my favorite things, I'm just going to, a diversion. When you operate any boat for commercial usage, you get this thing called a stability letter. Now, why is it called a stability letter? It's because a lot of those monomarans roll over when they're launched, or they roll over after they're done with people on board them, right? And so,
yeah.
I mean, the thing should be called a safety letter. And for some boats, stability might be the main issue. For our boats, it might be fire. I mean, we're like a toxic dump of if the thing catches on fire, you know? But,
yeah.
No, it's called a stability letter. And anyway, let me take a breath on the Coast Guard. So this 100-foot boat, all up with engines, and I didn't look up the Comanche. I wanted to look up the Comanche, the 100-footer that's out there racing the world circuit right now, trying to break every record. I don't know. Does she weigh 15 tons? This is a 100-foot boat, weighs 15 tons.
Yeah.
And with 70 people, fuel, and luggage, it weighs 25 tons. So fully operational, it's a 25-ton boat. At 100 feet, that's really incredibly light. The displacement length ratio on that is anywhere from 13 to 22. So for anybody that knows those numbers, that's a pretty cool thing. And I'm going to take the liberty here to say that it's crack-free after months of daily operation.
Yeah.
And, you know, she doesn't go real fast. She tops out at 24. She cruises right around 20, a little less. She only burns 11 gallons an hour, about a gallon and a half per mile.
Man, that's great. How many people? 70 people?
It'll carry 70 people. Yep. And so it's really fuel efficient. It's really lightweight. Now, I tried to create an analogy for this the way I did for the Wave Piercer, and I gave up. This is over my head. And, you know, analogies don't stand up in court because they'll find something wrong with your analogy, and then they'll just prove your original statement. So I'm not going to go there. Anyway, I've ridden on the craft, but not very much, and certainly not enough to give expert comment. And from my earlier comments about my motion sickness, I don't think there's any such thing as a comfortable boat, especially if it's lightweight. And I don't care how many holes it has. So, you know, you can go argue anything you want with me, but that's just how I feel. But proof is the boat's running, and that's enough for me. And it's way cheaper than it's $50 each way. It's the airplanes are 120, 130. It is bringing life back to the inner island transport thing. So, let's see. What is it?
Congratulations, so, Roger. Hey, congrats. How did you get through the Coast Guard in the end?
It took forever. And the guy who was really smart kept hearing me. I said, well, look, can I go back and can we throw all this finite element analysis away? Can I just come back and do what a lot of the guys call first principles, John Marples, Kurt Hughes, you know, that's what, just first principle, just basic engineering formulas out of the book. And he said, well, sure. But in a way, we were too tight into it. We came back and we strain gauged stuff and we proved the thing was overbuilt. The second boat will probably use all that as a basis. The second boat's already ordered, and materials are probably stacking up in the shop right now, and the design phase is beginning. They want to make it a little wider. This thing's really narrow, but it didn't need more stability. Big boats become very stable. But it is rolling a little bit, but if it went wide, it would snap, and if it went wide, it would be heavier and use more fuel. So it was my wisdom, for better or for worse, to keep it as functionally narrow. So they're going to change it. There's other things too. But anyway, so back to the beginning, what do we call it? Well, it's hard not to call it a quadram, but here's where I want the audience to get it. There's at least three combinations of four hulls, right? And maybe more. So four across is the most obvious. And probably the worst of all the combinations. Okay, now you can form a diagonal, one in front and then one out to either side, like almost like a trimaran. And I bet you that'll get tried someday, and it might be tried with foils. Our current four hole, what I'm going to call the tandem cat, our current four hole thing. I think Paul Beaker, the foil guy for the America's Cup, believes it's a really good species for foils. Mm. So we have two holes in front and two holes in the back, and hence the name Tandem Cat, Tandem Catamaran.
How much space in between the bow and of one and the stern of the other?
It's less than if each hole is a third of the length, it's less than a third. So I think on this boat it was 32 feet and 42, so that's 74. So we had 26 feet of open stand, and maybe it's a little more than that because waterline length. These weren't plumb bows and plumb sterns.
Yeah.
You know, I absolutely believe in reverse bows. I absolutely believe in getting as much buoyancy as you can out in front as low as possible. I love the bulbous bow idea. But the problem is, in the practical world where you do hit stuff, it's a trade-off. And so
yeah.
I always have a 10-degree stem simply because I like the way, as with the first lines of compromise, I like the way a 10-degree stem immediately gives buoyancy in the top side. And it also allows you to climb over things a little bit better. So that reduced the space between the holes is maybe more like 30 feet, actually, waterline to waterline, if that
yeah.
makes sense.
And so, Rod, can I ask you to dwell on this a little bit? As I understand it, the purpose of that space in the middle is so that the crest of the wave is not trying to pick the boat up in the middle. Is that the truth?
Well, and that was where his analogy, he's a car guy, and so that's where his analogy was playing in. And I was trying to play with how a tank or, you know, a bulldozer or something had to go over. So I don't want to try to build that kind of analogy, but and clearly the downside of it all is that if you don't have enough clearance on a wave, you're going to slam the wet deck. And the pressures from the CFE showed that we would be seeing high pressures starting at the very bow of the boat and coming back to about where the bow of the second hole started. So that middle space was seeing high pressures like further forward. It's really hard to say. And how many iterations could be done before this thing is perfected? There's an infinite number of ways to tie to do something. There's an infinite number of ways to do it.
Yeah.
And, I'll accept this thing being called a four-hole craft, but I think if you say tandem catamaran, you are going to be more accurate. And I don't want anybody to be rude or ignorant either, because I don't really think it's very nice if I call single-hole boats monomarans. I only say that because I suffered, and you did too, I suffered too much crap from prominent people. I mean, even my... The Schemes Element of Design book, which is a college standard, written by the last version after he'd passed away, written by Francis Kinney, had this whole thing on how, you know, the early multi-hulls, they'd sink first or they'd break apart, and then they'd sink from failing joints and things. And it's like, you know, what an uneducated thing to say for a man who was writing a book on design. He really should have done a little bit more research before he, you know, and so it's something you just had to deal with. And so, you know, I'm proud that we've won the battle.
Wow.
We clearly won the battle, right? And so I don't need to be derisive. And I don't think the boat deserves to be called a quadmaran. I think it deserves to be called a tandem cat. So
okay.
What's the name of the boat?
Yeah.
This boat's QE4. And QE stands for quantitative easing.
What is it?
Quantitative easing. That's
easing.
What the Fed does. That's what the Fed does, playing with the financial stuff. The guy's the economics guy, right? And I teased him. The IV stands for intravenous. But no, I think it's for four. But I don't really know. You have to ask Warren, you know. But the problem with talking to Warren is you've got to be ready for a serious conversation on about most anything.
Uh-huh.
I already told you the guy's really smart, and I don't want to puff him up anymore, but I'm telling you, you need to be on your toes when you talk to Warren about anything. So if you ever visit the Virgin Islands, you have the opportunity to take a ride on this because it's the ferry. It takes you between the two islands. So take it. It's cheaper than the airplane, and it'll probably be running. And also, after you've listened to this podcast, it's not a free ticket into Gold Coast, but if you call Rich or Gold Coast and ask if you can have a quick peek or a tour, it's on a stopping ground for a lot of people who come through. It's really a blessing that we're not in, like, you know, one of these major East Coast boat shops where people are kicking your tires all the time. We only get serious people. But it's only a serious person that wants to take the taxi ride out to look at it. But there's two facilities, and there's always something going on. There's a boat that's beginning, there's a boat that's under construction, and there's a boat at the dock getting finished. And it's really cool to see it, and I'm really proud of that. And this thing is working, and it deserves some respect. So when's the discussion of the Gordon Ram?
Well, at this point, Roger and I began speaking of other things. There's another 5 minutes here about stuff that's not so techie. Perhaps you'd like to hear it.
Let's hope your main dream and my life's work, commercial boats, let's hope that they do make a difference. You know, I've often look at the old Herreshoff hulls and some of the old, you know, the famous designers, and some of those boat shapes are beautiful and they're loved, but I've hoped that the boats that I built, especially the newer ones that are infused foam glass, they don't really do very well in the landfill. They're kind of hard to run over with a bulldozer. they don't really biodegrade very quickly, and I hope that they are useful for so long into the future. But I'm with you. I'd like to see commercial craft out there. I don't know. We are using up a whole lot of time, but I have to tell you that I am disappointed sometimes watching how much trash comes out of my factory. You know, we buy new things all the time, and we really don't know how much trash was left behind from building our phone or building our car or whatever we're buying. But I can tell you, if you're buying a boat, there's a lot of trash that gets left behind. So I looked at Warren. I said, Warren, do you have enough money to – were you willing to throw some money at me trying to deal with the waste here so that we can get it recycled or properly reused? And he goes, if it makes you happy. And I go, well, Warren, I was kind of hoping it'll make you happy too, you know? And so, okay. So I said, well, here's my plan. I said, well, I need to buy, or at least long-term rent, a 40-foot container. And as we have, you know, our buckets of cured glue pots, you know, the guys are stirring and mixing and over-mixes, constantly over-mixes, and, you know, the brushes with glue in them and the film bag with glue on it, and just it's constant trash coming out, mucking up molds and cutoffs of foam. You buy a 4x8 sheet of foam, there's cutoffs of foam. So I'm calling the foam company. I'm not naming any names. I'm calling the glue company. I'm not naming any names. What do we do with this used product? We don't know.
Yeah.
What do you mean you don't know? There's nothing we can do to recycle this? Yeah, this is really important. We don't really know. And I said, well, you start thinking about it, please. I said, I got a guy who's willing to pay to have it recycled if you can tell me how to do it, and then you'll be able to put it in your newsletter. I mean, come on. Nope.
Yeah. So I think, Roger, from what I've heard, and I don't know, but I think it's against the law in Germany to put any plastic in the landfill. It is all recyclable, but it's expensive. And that's
right.
A cost that we are going to have to assume if we're going to continue to build, you know, even our what our food comes in, you know?
Right. What our food comes in.
It
is amazing how much trash we all make. And if you buy a boat, you made a lot of trash. And it is a really big problem. I didn't mean to harp on it, but, you know, it's a reality. So what it means is that all boats that get built should be loved and be done carefully and wisely and everything that gets built. I love what is it, Denmark right now has new taxation laws trying to benefit those people who are repairing and rebuilding old things. So so that instead of buying something new, you could go down and get maybe a pair of shoes that have been re-glued properly or whatever you're going to buy.
Yeah.
And a toaster that got fixed, the kind that your grandmother had that never, you know. And that is a that's maybe a new industry for the U.S. too, tax benefits for reusing stuff.
Well, the way I like to say it is the application of modern technology to ancient concepts.
Yep.
And that's what we got here, you know, with windmills and boats, and it's all been done before. There's really nothing new under the sun except perhaps modern electronic communication. Maybe we can take that back to smoke signals, you know. But we got to learn. We got to learn how to apply what we've learned in the Industrial Revolution to solving the old problems. And one of the biggest ones is open water transportation. And boy, Roger, you have really focused on it, man. Hats off to you. Hats off to Roger Hatfield and Gold Coast. And thank you so many times for doing this for us this morning. Thanks a lot, Roger.
Pleasure. Thank you all very much for listening.
Yes, indeed. And until our next junket into the outrigged world, fair winds.